Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Hello and welcome to a brand new, very special episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by Coronation.com and hosted on JitteryMonkey.com, part of the Jittery Monkey family of podcasts. My name is Greg Mahochko. Joining me as always is Haas Reuter, and I say very special because sometimes you get a Friday Five Heart Podcast, sometimes it's a Saturday, and in a rare occasion, yes, we've even had a Sunday morning podcast. But I don't think ever in the history of the Five Heart Podcast have we ever brought to you on a Monday. That is because I have, and I think I've told the story before, so bear with me, but I have a son who likes to shirk his, you know, normal bedtime and ignore it, so I've got to keep an eye on him. That was Friday night. And then Saturday night, I had a wedding that I went to with my wife, one of her coworkers. Had a good time, but obviously got home too late, and, you know, Haas is a gentleman in his 20s and, you know, probably had things going on. And so here we are Sunday night, almost 11 o'clock. I assure you folks, this is not going to be one of those hour-long chats. I just don't have it in me. But happy Monday to you. Thank you for starting out your work week with us, whether you're at home, at work, or in your vehicle of choice. Thanks for joining us. Haas, welcome. Good evening to you, sir.
Good evening to you as well. How's it going?
It's going all right, going all right. You have spent your evening working on homework. I spent my evening trying to get my son to sleep and watching the Royal Rumble. So you'll be happy to know, fans of MMA, that Ronda Rousey did make an appearance, and looks like they're setting something up for her for WrestleMania. But you don't have to take my word for it, as our friends at Reading Rainbow would say. Yeah, we're watching old Reading Rainbow with my son. You can check that out live right now on the Jittery Monkey Network. Is the latest episode of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. Kevin and Chad are recapping not just the Royal Rumble, but Chad was in Philadelphia with all of the pro wrestling festivities, so he's going to be recapping the entire weekend. So check that out, My 1-2-3 Cents. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, JitteryMonkey.com. Have at it. Anyway. Husker talk that we're going to try to zero in and focus a little bit more this week than we have last week, buddy. I'm going to start with one of the newest commits to the Nebraska football team, Cam Jones, and I want to talk about what he brings to the field from, you know, the physical standpoint. But he put out a tweet, and I saw it, you know, earlier today, tonight. But, you know, I'm sure that's probably when he posted it. If you've got the tweet pulled up, I'd love for you to read it to me. It's about, essentially what we talk about, you know, putting too much stock in recruit rates and the number of stars. If you've got that pulled up, buddy, throw me that tweet if you can read it verbatim.
Yeah. I mean, I won't put anyone on blast, you know, in terms of the Twitter handle who tweeted Cam Jones about, you know, his commitment, but the person said that they wanted a five-star guy, and Cam Jones responded with, "Y'all get so caught up in the stars, it's crazy that you only get a fifth star if you basically camp all summer and it's based on hype, and going for five stars based off of the recruiting services is why Nebraska wasn't Nebraska anymore." He said, "You gotta look for dogs," which, you know, to be a good football player, you got to have some dog in you, some dirt bag in you, as I always say. And it's based on film and not just, you know, recruiting rankings based off of where people camp. And, you know, like the star system is a pretty decent indicator of talent, but a lot of the time it is based, like what Cam Jones was saying in that tweet about, you know, people camping at the rivals' camps and getting the exposure and the notoriety from rivals. And it's not based off of actually playing football and what you put on film. And, you know, Cam Jones, big-bodied safety who, you know, quite honestly, could probably end up being an outside linebacker, or a hybrid type player, a big nickel type of player for us in Shenander's defense. And yeah, I mean, I really like, you know, film evaluations and, you know, comparing where their other offers are coming from for a better indicator of where a player will project at the next level.
Yeah, and that is, I mean, his response in you know, you taking the high road, not putting anybody on blast, as you said, probably not something I would have done, because I would have probably called that person out. First of all, this is a heck of a get for Nebraska. And I think people, not just Husker fans, but college football fans across the board, I think the smart ones don't put as much stock in the star rate system, the truly smart ones, but you get so many more casual fans who you're like, oh, well, we've got, you know, there are only 22 five-star players in this recruiting cycle, and we've got four of them, so we're upper echelon. That doesn't always, you know, mean anything. As you said, you've got to have your phrase was dirtbag. Cam Jones's, you know, word was dog. You've got to have guys who just want to put in the effort, put in the work, and play whistle to whistle, and you know, just go, just have that desire. I'm not nobody in particular as far as five stars. No, not any individual is coming to mind, but I'm sure that there are some people, some college athletes, not just football, but you know, who look at that five star, you know, ranking that they're given and think that they can just coast on it. Where you might have a small town two star or three star, something like that, who's going to go to a school. And again, Nebraska, you know, is our most, identifiable or most desired example, but any school, and they're going to outwork a high four-star or five-star. This is why we called this podcast from the very beginning, Brian and I, we called it the Five Heart Podcast, because those are the players that we always wanted to see at Nebraska, are the kids who are, you know, putting in the, you know, they're the Sam Fultzes. They're the Andy Janoviches, for recent memory. They're the kids who, you know, may have had a small offer list or may have, you know, been part of that vaunted walk-on program of days gone by, who are out to prove something, or they're playing for, you know, they're carrying the weight of, you know, I think this is something that Nebraska fans get caught up on too, is the home state kids. They're, you know, playing for the pride of the state, you know, things like that. Those are always the types of players that I wanted. I'd rather have more, you know, hungry three stars than, casual or coasting five stars on my team. I don't know. That's just my, you know, I want kids who, you know, want to be there. Maybe it was their only choice. I don't know. But you know, who play with purpose, I guess, and play for the school, not just play for the next level.
Yeah, and I mean, that, and what you illustrated with what you just said was, it's not, you know, a case of talented players or, you know, lazy and untalented players just want it more. But there is the case of guys, you know, rest on their laurels of their recruiting rankings. And what you want when you bring talent into your program is you want talented guys who are going to work hard. And then you also, you know, through a walk-on program or guys who weren't highly recruited, but, you know, you took a flyer on them, so to speak, you want guys who you can develop, and they're going to, you know, develop into a decently talented player, or maybe a really talented player who's still going to put the work in. And, you can't arrive to a Division I college football program resting on the laurels of what you accomplished in high school. That's a good way, you know, to just basically wash out, you know, not accomplishing anything at the college level.
I always point to, and I'll catch some heat for this because it's, you know, it's not Nebraska, but to this day, you know, I'm 35 and a half years old, but to this day, my favorite movie And I'm a nerd, so, you know, you think it might be the Avengers, one of the Avengers movies, or a Batman movie or something like that. But to this day, my favorite movie is Rudy. And part of it is, you know, because I'm Catholic, maybe, I don't know. And so there's something about that bond with Notre Dame. But, you know, he's a blue-collar kid, and he's going and he's putting in the work. And he's like, you know, this is my dream. I'm going to run out of that tunnel. I'm going to run onto that field. And if you watch the movie, and certainly if you know anything about, you know, the real life, you know, stories, it's a guy who had no business being on that field, but he put in the effort, the blood, sweat, and the tears, and you got to have players like that on your team to be successful, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a culture thing at that point, you know, the locker room culture, the program culture, guys who are going to, you know, put forth the effort and create a atmosphere of positive peer pressure, you know, that forces other guys, you know, to buy in and put in the work. You know, I think in psychology it's called social proofing, you know, when someone's behavior and the work they put in is modeled towards other people to raise their level of, you know, buy-in. And you got to have those guys, because if you don't, you just, you know, like Urban Meyer said earlier this week, I think it must have been at a coach's clinic, he was talking about how talent alone gets you 7 wins, and, you know, buy-in, you know, working hard will get you 9 to 10 wins, and then leadership is what really, you know, and the team policing itself, you know, in accordance to the rules of the program, will put you over the top to, you know, competing for championships. And, you know, it's, you got to have those ingredients in place. You got to have the right mixture of those ingredients. And it's so vital to have. Without it, I mean, you're basically going to perform just at the baseline of what that talent is.
And, you know, it's funny that you said, you know, that quote or that explanation comes from Urban Meyer, because it's not somebody that we like to think of, you know, out in Nebraska with any type of positive, you know, mentality.
Yeah.
You know, to that point, that is a really good description. And I'm not, you know, railing anybody, dogging on anybody, but that's a pretty fair, I think, analysis of the last couple of years of Nebraska football. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. And I would think it's kind of a confluence of all those factors, where you had guys who didn't buy into the new staff, and you also had some talent, you know, discrepancies on the roster. And then you had guys who didn't police themselves and police others. The weight room, you know, being accountable to each other. And that basically sums up, you know, 2015 through 2017 for Nebraska football right then and there.
We, during your response there, Hoss, we kind of went in and out, but people, I think, got the gist of what you were saying. I'm not going to go back and fix it in post or anything like that, but yeah, it's there's got to be, and I think there will be now with, you know, Scott Frost coming in and his staff, I think there's going to be a turnaround. I mean, obviously we all hope for it, but we all hope for it around, you know, with Pelini and even Mike Riley to, I don't know, maybe subdued or you know, questionable goals, something like that. But I think with what people have seen from Scott Frost, both on the field at Nebraska and what they've seen from him on the sidelines in all of his, you know, coaching stops, he is going to bring a culture of success with him. There is, I mean, and this is not the first time, I don't think we've talked about it, and certainly it's not the first time it's been talked about, but there's just an air of success about him. But I say that not to make it sound like Scott Frost is an arrogant person. I don't think he is at all. I think, you know, if you watched his introductory press conference, and you did, I did, you know, I think most Husker fans did, he's very calm and you know, humble. He's got, and I say this with hopefully not showing my bias to Nebraska, he's got that, you know, kind of small-town, soft-spoken Nebraska way about him that is, you know, nothing flashy, just, you know, let's get down to business. And now that we're into, you know, the last few days of January, You know, we're starting to see the businesses is about to pick up, to use an old JR, you know, phrase there.
Nice.
But, you know, the guys are starting to hit the weight room. We're getting into that winter conditioning. And if you think about it, we're not all that far away from spring practice. You know, before the team takes the field, what needs to be established, in your opinion, you know, as far as before they head to, you know, spring practice and especially the spring game? What, and I'm not talking about, like, you know, we won't have a clear-cut idea who the starters are or anything like that, but just mentality-wise, what needs to be established just from working together, spending time together, being in the weight room, things like that?
Well, first and foremost, what has to be established is accountability, you know, and preparation, you know, whether that be in the weight room or watching film, in this case with the new staff coming in, learning the playbook. And that's really where it starts because, you know, I think I said it after the Wisconsin game and one of my articles on coordination, you know, Nebraska-Wisconsin games, those games aren't won. Wisconsin didn't win those games in October. They won those games from the months of January to August in preparation, in the weight room, practice, film, you know, everything. And so that being accountable in your physical and mental preparation is what has to occur this spring. And without it, you know, we saw what happened, you know, the past 3 years without it. And so, you know, you can talk about bringing in the talent, you know, and that's the larger piece of the equation, you know. But the biggest thing right now is going to be the guys on campus and getting them ready to be able to go win games in the fall.
The championships, you know, the wins, like you said, they don't – that culture's not created in September, October. It's got to start now. The staff that Scott Frost has brought in, we've talked about, you know, they're going to – as far as – I'm trying to ask a question to you, buddy, without the response being completely 100% predictable. And that's tough based on, you know, the coaching staff that we have now versus the coaching staff, you know, of the years prior. But it seems to me like this staff, I mean, obviously there's some unity there. They're all coming, you know, they all came from Orlando. So, you know, there's a hierarchy, there's a pecking order in place, so to speak. Everybody's got a job. And if you look at the success that, Central Florida had, seems like everybody on the coaching staff knows their job, and now it's just time to do that job in a bigger arena, with a bigger spotlight.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest keys to Frost bringing his entire staff is that they're all familiar with each other. They all know, as you said, the pecking order, and they're going to know what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. I think that's, you know, we learned the hard way last season bringing in Diaco, who just totally disrupted the homeostasis of the program, you know, with guys, you know, who'd been on Riley's staff for a while feeling kind of disenfranchised and, you know, Diaco kind of coming in and wanting to run things, you know, having a little bit more oversight over the program than a defensive coordinator really should. And, you can't underestimate how important staff continuity is. And, you know, they went from 0-12 to, you know, 13-0 in the matter of 2 years at UCF, doing what they did and working with each other. And you have to think that Frost, you know, logic behind bringing the entire staff was, well, we did it there, you know. I'm not going to do anything to disrupt this, what we've got going on amongst the staff. So I'm going to bring them all to Lincoln and see if we can do it here.
You did mention Bob Diaco, which, you know, is a name that's going to, I think, it if not right away down the road, is going to be, you know, talked about in soft whispers, just like, you know, a certain head coach by the name of Bill Callahan. It's like, ooh, we're not going to, you know, we don't know about that guy. In your opinion, would the Huskers have been better off sticking with Banker? I mean, there was so much coaching turnover in Riley's, you know, tenure. Would they have just been better off sticking with him for one more year just to see what would have happened? Or do you think that a change needed to be made and maybe just the right change wasn't made? Now it's a year later and it's a moot point. Anyway, I understand that. But would 2017 have been different if Mark Banker were still the defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think so. I think we probably would have won 7 or 8 games with Mark Banker as the defensive coordinator. The turnover of having to learn a new scheme, going from the 4-3 to the 3-4, coupled with Diaco's coaching style and practice that the Big Red Cobcast guys are now at a site that we don't affiliate with, touched on with Charlie McBride, you know, that really influenced, you know, the defensive, just, I don't even know the word that would be accurate to describe the depths of our defensive performance, but yeah, I mean, I think keeping Banker, staying in that 4-3, one gap, gap pressure, quarters coverage scheme, I think that we're more well suited to that in retrospect. And I think that we could have, I think we could have played more aggressively in that scheme and probably could have fared a lot better against, say, Minnesota, you know, probably Northwestern, maybe Iowa, just because, you know, trying to shoot gaps instead of just hold gaps in a two-gap scheme like Diaco's. And so I think that Banker's firing was a bit of a decision that came from above Riley, and I think it was kind of in accordance to two things. One, the 40 points we gave up in Iowa City at the end of 2016, and coupled with Banker's comment about Iowa's practices being bloodbaths, you know, which was kind of a veiled shot at perhaps the nature of our practices. So, yeah, I think we still probably would have got tuned up by Ohio State and Penn State, but I don't think we probably would have got just, you know, mowed down, ground down in a war of attrition against Wisconsin, because Banker's defense has always played Wisconsin very tough. We saw that in 2015 and 2016, losing 23-20 and then 23-17 in overtime. So I think that things would have been different.
Interesting. It's not something that, you know, we ever talked about. I don't know if anybody ever really touched on it in any of the Nebraska, you know, Husker media personnel. But yeah, I'm just curious on your take on that. Let's switch things up real quick. It was another successful week, almost full week, for the Husker men's basketball team. They went 2-for-3 or 2-1 in, you know, other terms over the week, including the big one for us, the fun one, was Saturday night, the Coaches versus Cancer Night, home against Iowa. We talked about that here on the show previously, but coming up big with a nice double-digit win, almost putting a hundy up on the Hawkeyes, 98-84, the final. They also got road wins against Rutgers, or I should say road win against Rutgers, but last Monday night falling a little short to Ohio State. I mean, this is a Husker team. Now, granted, as you listen to this, folks, Monday night they do go on the road to Madison to face Wisconsin tonight. But this is a team that's got 3 losses in the month of January, but, you know, a fair amount of wins: Northwestern, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan. You know, that Michigan was a, you know, top 23 or number 23 at the time. Rutgers, Iowa. So getting some wins, Haas, in the Big Ten is, you know, be it home or away, Big Ten is still, you know, a heck of a basketball conference. So we'll take it. We'll, you know, of course, exclamation point being that win over Michigan, but got an opportunity to kind of continue writing the narrative for this team. They got a couple of back-to-back games or back-to-back road games. Good news is they're about a week apart. As I mentioned, Wisconsin tonight, and then their next game's not until next Tuesday, February 6th at Minnesota. But, you know, Tim Miles' team is continuing to compete. They're out there playing hard for him. I don't know if they realize that maybe, you know, he, at least coming into the season, coach was on the hot seat or what, but it seems like they're playing really hard for him, playing like a cohesive unit.
Yeah, and it's kind of, they're playing as a cohesive unit and shots are falling. And I liked what Miles said yesterday or last night after the game, where he said it's amazing what a better coach he is when he has good talent. And, you know, that kind of says it all right there. You know, talent's, you know, everything. And this team, you know, I'd love to be just, you know, total optimist and say this year we're going to get into the dance and break through and win a game. But I'll kind of curtail that for now. But I do think this team could make the dance, you know. And just they're playing really well, and they just can't peak too soon. And, you know, biggest thing, shots just got to keep falling.
On the women's side, and folks, we are, I don't want to say we're speeding through topics here, but we're moving along. Like I said, it's late. We've both got, you know, I've got work, and Haas has school and probably work, because he's...
Yep. It's a two-a-day tomorrow.
It's two-a-day. He's got morning session and afternoon session. But the women's basketball team, they completed the nice weekend sweep of Iowa. Men, of course, as I mentioned, winning on Saturday, and the Husker women beat the snot out of Iowa. The final score won't reflect it, 92-74, but I think at one point it was 60-something to 20-something. I mean, it was ridiculous, you know, following the quarter-by-quarter scores that our favorite Husker women's basketball correspondent Jill was sharing in the Slack chat room. So another dominating performance there. Coach Williams is doing a great thing this year. You know, this was a number 25 Iowa team. It was on the road. It was a 36-point lead in the third quarter. The Huskers, Lady Huskers, are now 16-6 overall, 7-2 in the Big Ten. And Haas, they've only got one loss in the calendar year 2018, and that was in overtime by 5 points to Michigan. They're going to be back in action on Thursday, February 1st, later this week, obviously, hosting Illinois. In fact, they've got three in a row at home, folks, so go on out there and support your Husker women's basketball team. Illinois, Maryland, Wisconsin, all coming to the Pinnacle Bank Arena within the next 2 weeks or so. I mean, playing at a high level, and with all the, you know, turmoil and drama last season that carried into the offseason and the departure of Jessica Shepherd, I mean, they've bounced back really well. I think probably, you know, some might say outperforming expectations at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, last year was, you know, pretty rough year in terms of Amy Williams taking over for Connie Yori, but, I mean, it kind of snuck up on me. I mean, I don't follow women's basketball very closely, i.e. at all, but yeah, just being honest here. But, you know, to put together, you know, once, you know, just one loss in this calendar year, and to be really making some strides from what was a pretty putrid year last year, definitely heading in the right direction. And what's even better is last night's win against Iowa in men's basketball and today's win against Iowa in women's basketball. I mean, it's the opening shots of reclaiming, you know, the border war.
And it all, I mean, it's there are some of us, you know, and you mentioned earlier, you know, our friends at the Big Red Cobcast, who have, you know, long debated if Iowa is a rival. I always consider a rival the team that you know, absolutely tears you up inside if you lose to them.
It ruins my year to lose to Iowa.
Right, yeah. So you consider Iowa a rival.
Oh, yeah. I have a dear close friend who I would almost consider a family member, who she's a fantastic person, but, you know, great in every aspect, but she has one major character flaw. She's an Iowa fan.
You don't need that kind of negativity in your life, Haas.
I went to Iowa City with her in 2016. On the way back, three of us were in the car, and I was in the back seat before I started driving. You know, we switched and I drove. And every time I'd shut my eyes to try to get some sleep, I'd just see Akram Wadley slicing through the defense, you know, for 75 yards. And then the following Monday when I got back, you know, into town and I was in class for my 8 a.m. history lecture. Before class started, the history professor looked at me. I didn't know she was an Iowa fan, but she just goes, "What's that, 2 years in a row?" And a little part of me died inside that day.
There's something about Iowa, and maybe it's not the school itself, maybe it's the fans, that just grate on my nerves. Congratulations, Iowa. As far as football, you've beaten us when we've been at our worst, I guess. But have you beat us when we've been at our best? I don't think so.
Nope.
So, you know, we can always say that. But always good to see the W's in the notches in the win column when Iowa is involved. Real quick, moving on to wrestling and not the Royal Rumble, but the Husker wrestling team got a senior day win on Sunday, beating Indiana 23-18 at the Devaney Center. That was a dual. Haas, I don't know if you were following Husker wrestling on Twitter, but they were giving away sweater vests, Husker sweater vests.
Oh, I saw that,
to the first 100 fans, and I hope somebody picked me up one. I mean, I put it out there on social media. I said, I need a 2X. Somebody go. You know, I'll pay for shipping. Nobody responded to that tweet. So,
man,
that's rough. By the way, folks, if you are on social media and you want to interact with the show, we'd certainly love to hear your thoughts. And you can do so on Facebook. Obviously, Coronation is there. That's probably the main account that you're following and interacting with. We get it. They're established. We're the up and comers, if you will. But throw a like onto the Facebook page, facebook.com/5heartpodcast. That's all spelled out, all the words, including five. But on Twitter, it's the Twitter handle is the number 5 and then Heart Podcast. So follow, like, whatever you got to do on social media, engage, interact. We certainly would appreciate it. Haas, any final thoughts before we wrap things up?
No, I think we've about covered it. We just got to, as usual, win the damn off season.
Now you're jumping ahead of me.
Oh, shit.
That's okay. But before we head out, as I mentioned, the Royal Rumble was tonight. You can get the recap and Kevin and Chad's thoughts on the My 123 Cents, the podcast. So check that out, jitterymonkey.com. Also, My 123 Cents on Facebook and Twitter and other social media avenues. The winner of the Royal Rumble, the men's Royal Rumble, Haas, was a Japanese wrestler by the name of Shinsuke Nakamura. Are you familiar with him?
I am not.
He is the king of strong style, which pretty much means that when he kicks you, it hurts like hell. Very, very popular wrestler, but he will go on to main event WrestleMania. And the only reason I bring this up is fantasy booking. If you could book the main event of WrestleMania with any wrestlers, tell you what, no, let's have more fun with it. No, let's stay, because I know that if I went with any coaches, you'd probably go either Tom Osborne or Milt Tenneper versus, like a Nick Saban or, that ilk. But so let's stick with wrestlers. Any wrestlers, past, present, living, dead, your dream WrestleMania, who would you pick?
Oof. Know what? When I watched wrestling growing up as a kid, one of my favorite finishing moves was the Arn Anderson Spine Buster. Uh-huh. Just a thing of beauty. I mean, it's poetry in motion. Let's go with the Spine Buster match here. Arn Anderson versus Triple H.
Okay. All right. Unexpected. Certainly two of the best minds in the business. I like it. I'd want to have Macho Man Randy Savage involved in there, and probably, because we already saw Savage Steamboat, we've seen Savage Hogan, we saw Savage Ultimate Warrior. I want to go somebody from not of that particular era. How about Randy Savage versus, at his prime, the next president of the United States, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
That'd be a good one. That'd be a good one.
I don't even know if The Rock is entertaining the thought of running, but I thought I saw somebody joke with him, or he joked about it on social media. I don't know. All I can say, and we're going to get out of here because we don't get political. Rock, if you're listening, buddy, if you decide to run for the president 2020, run as an independent. Let's blow this two-party system up. Let's do it. We need X amount of percentage of the votes, and I think, Dwayne Johnson, you, sir, are popular enough. You are the man who could help implode this corrupt two-party system. All right, that's it. I'm done.
Dilly dilly.
You know, damn dilly dilly. I can't hear dilly dilly. I can't see it in writing. I cannot fathom dilly dilly. This is all right. You know what I visualize when somebody says or when I read dilly dilly? You ever watch Game of Thrones?
And, I have not, unfortunately.
Okay, so there are listeners out there who have listened or who have watched Game of Thrones. One of the main characters, maybe not main, secondary character, gets his manhood chopped off, and in a taunting fashion, another secondary character, spoiler alert, later dies in a very deserving way because he's a bad guy. He has like a big sausage link meant to represent the first man's lost manhood. Anyway, he's taking said sausage link and kind of waving it. I'll send you the GIF. You'll understand what I'm seeing, what I'm talking about. But when I see or hear dilly dilly, for whatever reason, maybe it's because I'm a warped and twisted individual, but that's what goes through my mind. So, Haas, I'll send that to you so you can understand what in the hell I'm talking about. Everybody else, thanks for tuning in. Hey, this is a Monday, and we're all in it together. So have a great day. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time on the Five Heart Podcast, where we do remind you every week that's not about the stars. It's about the heart, and Five Heart is all the heart you need. Go Big Red.
Win the damn off season.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.